Okay, back on the record, January 17th, 2025, 10:15 a.m., the Meadowview Consolidated Administrative Appeals. We're still in the Heffern testimony, direct testimony from Ms. Koloskova. So, Ms. Heffern, you're still under oath. Let's move on at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. Ms. Heffern, we were talking about water quality and water temperatures. You had just finished testifying as to Kitsap County Code 17500027B and screening of the storm pond. Anything else you want to add on those topic areas before I ask you to talk about other stormwater considerations?
Yeah, I did just want to clarify the comment that I made about the bioretention has been shown to decrease temperature. That is actually in the new 2024 Department of Ecology manual.
Okay.
And I am happy to show that for a moment. So this,
and this is the page you were looking for a moment ago.
Yes, this is the applications and limitations of bioretention. This is.
But this manual is not part of what you're designing to.
It is not, but you know, best available science is always updated in, you know, additional documents, and so the fact that they're noting bioretention is shown to decrease temperature. It's just a further statement of what we were.
But I guess the manual that you showed that you are complying with also addressed bioretention as this would not be a change to DOE's position in terms of bioretention, is it?
Okay. No.
Okay.
No, right. Not at all.
Okay. So we like bioretention in terms of water quality treatment and temperature.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to take you to the consideration of your stormwater, pardon me, your drainage report and testimony that was from the Friends witnesses that was examining your downstream analysis. Do you recall testimony with respect to that consideration in your drainage report?
I do.
Okay. And can you explain for us what level or type of downstream analysis you did and why, based on, I guess, Kitsap County regulation?
Yeah. So when we evaluate what's considered a downstream analysis, we start with Kitsap County Storm Drainage Manual. I'm going to share my screen. Yes. And so we start, this is page PDF, page 48, document page 22, section 3.2. The very first step is to identify the receiving water body and downstream conveyance. This is also in accordance with Kitsap County Code, chapter or title 12.10.070. And this section notes that the applicant must determine the receiving water body or natural discharge point for the stormwater runoff from the project site and the downstream conveyance.
Okay. So how did you implement that for this project?
So the Kitsap County manual has guidance on three separate levels of what's considered a downstream analysis. This is in volume two. I'm gonna go to the page, PDF page 181. And so per this guidance within the downstream analysis, the analysis shall extend a quarter mile downstream from the project site, and the existing or potential impacts have to be evaluated and mitigated, and shall include excess sedimentation, erosion, discharges, groundwater contribution, recharge zones, violations of water quality standards, and spill and discharge of priority pollutants. So through this, the minimum analysis of a level one was completed. It was performed. There was no signs of downstream problems. Using publicly available data, we researched that from a mile downstream of the site. Further analysis or a higher level of analysis was not required. And I would note that a level two analysis, it adds the additional analysis to be done at the existing or predicted water quality or quantity problem. Since there was no problem evaluated in level one, a level two would not provide any additional data.
Friends, testimony pointed to your drainage report and I think suggested that maybe you gave downstream analysis short shrift. Can you talk about whether you complied with the manual or why you didn't provide more written address of downstream analysis?
As noted, as water leaves the site, it traverses easterly through the buffers and into Barker Creek. Barker Creek then flows south through private property. So we've used all available data to research what we can for this system. Seeing nothing for the mile downstream, we came to the conclusion that there is no downstream concern or impact.
Friends also pointed to the critical areas report and some labeling of dirt bike areas, et cetera. Do you remember that conversation?
Yes, I think that's an exhibit F53. Are you talking about this map here that I'm showing?
Yes, and I think just to clarify the exhibit reference, I have that as exhibit F43.
I'm sorry, yes, F43, page 18.
Okay. Yes, I believe that's the map. Now, I guess, could you use this map to describe, I guess, where does your downstream analysis start and talk a little bit about these features and I guess what exists there today for purposes of relevancy to your stormwater work?
Yep. So the downstream analysis begins at your, I'm going to say southernmost. What I mean by southernmost is gradient wise, your lowest point on your site as water exits your property.
So it's not a compass direction question. It's a question of gradient.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And in on this site, then, as I understand your testimony, that coincides roughly with the southern, I guess, portion of your site.
Yes,
okay.
The southern corner, as well as the majority of the southern half of the eastern property line, is all roughly around the same elevation, but water is exiting the site along this way in an easterly direction toward Barker Creek, and then everything runs south.
Okay.
So for the purposes of our analysis, we've started at the southernmost location. That way our extents downstream is more conservative. If we started where water left up here, I feel like we wouldn't be going downstream far enough.
Okay. When you say up here, you mean further north in the site?
Yes.
Okay. So there is discussion on this map of things like dirt bike alley. Could you describe what is dirt bike alley and what's going on with these features?
So Dirt Bike Alley was a part of the original Krista camps when this was an active camp. My understanding is that these are dormant at this time, but it's essentially a bit irrelevant to the project simply because the project site is defined as the portion of our property and or properties right of way subject to land disturbing activities. We are not doing any land disturbing activities within any buffers, nor on the eastern portion of Barker Creek.
Okay, and do those, I guess, using, could you blow this map up a little bit,
yeah,
please? So as I see these dirt bike alley, 12 inch plastic culvert, all of these features, can you walk through where these features are, as I guess those relate to your stormwater facilities, so that we understand, so that we just have an accurate understanding of existing conditions versus where the stormwater facilities are going.
Yeah. Roughly speaking, and this is very rough, we have two stormwater facilities on site, our two ponds, that discharge roughly as such.
Okay. And to be very accurate, we would refer to the stormwater construction plans, right? I don't
Correct.
Need to change that. I just want to make sure that we do have that information in the record, right?
Yes. Very detailed in the record.
Go ahead.
But our facilities, while they're on the eastern portion of our site, discharge in a southeasterly manner, and actually discharge before the buffers, and discharge toward Barker Creek. Any water from our site is downstream of these dirt bike alley locations, and therefore not related essentially to the project site.
Okay, and you don't propose to use any of those, I guess, maybe old trails or whatever they might have been back when they were used for the camp?
Correct. Our plans do not show any connections to that, nor pedestrian routing through that eastern parcel.
Okay. Any other information you want to share with the examiner about this downstream, about the downstream analysis and sort of how you viewed the project site related in its relationship to what it might be categorized as downstream?
Yeah, well, I think we want to make it clear too about what's upstream.
Okay.
Upstream drainage, the Kitsap County manual, which is in section 4.7.1, notes that the upstream portion of the study area shall encompass the entire tributary drainage area, that area that drains to the proposed project site. So the tributary area that drains to our site would be properties along the western side. The eastern side drains to Barker Creek, which is not our project site.
So you really, I mean, it seems like your stormwater report takes into account really quite a range of off-site properties, not just Barker Creek, for example, but also the properties you just said to the west.
Yes. I mean, a good portion of the properties to the west are developed and have their own stormwater mitigation. So not everything along the west side is coming out our property, but it is included in the analysis.
Okay. And just to ask one other question on that, and this might be useful exhibit for this, although I recognize this is not your document. There have been some questions and testimony related to stormwater coming off of, I think, the school site over that is maybe, I guess, flowing relatively westbound. And yeah, this document shows these stormwater pipes. Can you describe to us what the condition is and how the stormwater plan addresses those offsite coming onto onsite flows?
So there are some stormwater conveyance systems that are installed on the park property, which is just due east of the school property.
Okay.
And what they are is dispersion devices, very similar to what we have at the north end of Island Lake, and they have an associated flow path to them. That is all fully contained on their property. In the event that water continues and isn't fully dispersed, infiltrated, or evapotranspired before it leaves the property, it would be intercepted on our property. That interception can be done in a number of ways. We could put in a secondary perforated pipe system that connects through our system or that bypasses our system. There are many ways to mitigate upstream drainage.
Okay. And how do you actually handle that water if it gets added into your stormwater system?
If it gets, sorry?
Does it have a separate pipe or what do you do with it?
It can be connected to the conveyance system through the project site if it just has to be modeled accordingly. So it has to either be included in our calculations if it's modeled and goes to our ponds, or it could be in a separate pipe and bypasses the system as long as we maintain its natural drainage.
And when do you do that? I mean, how do I know, or how does Friends know that you're actually going to do that work if you haven't done it now?
So they, I mean, further evaluation always occurs in construction. So if there's additional water that needs to be intercepted that was not found to be intercepted at the time of drainage, then we would account for that. It's my understanding, and I don't have anything on it right now, but I do believe that there is a small portion of that upstream that is accounted for in our current system.
Meaning your stormwater calculations?
Yes.
Okay. And were you present for Ms. Decker's testimony about the soil nail walls and how those work in terms of drainage?
Yep.
Okay. Would you agree with that testimony, or do you want to change or add anything to that?
No, I mean, as Ms. Decker described, the soil nail walls and the drainage behind those bases will assist in any concerns in that area.
Okay, I am going to now turn your attention to, so I'm done, if you, I mean, whatever exhibit you want to use for your testimony, I want to ask you to address slightly separate topic, which is the Urban Conservancy buffer. And testimony related to, I guess, questioning what's happening within that 100-foot Urban Conservancy buffer.
Okay. To talk about that, I think it's going to be best to share Exhibit F50, which is our civil and landscape plans. And I'm going to go to sheet L2.03, which is PDF page 112. This is our landscape plan. This sheet particularly is specific, right, to the northeast corner of the property.
Okay. And this has a couple of colored lines on it. Could you describe what those lines are?
Yes. And for the record, I added those colored lines just now.
Okay.
So those are not in the record. The lines are a little faint, and so I wanted to make it clear.
I'm sorry. So the lines exist in the original document. They're just not colorized.
We'll zoom in and show. They are colorized.
I see.
They're just faint.
I see. Okay.
So for the purposes of how small screens are, I wanted to be clear.
Thank you. Okay. Go ahead if you can describe for us once you get that document back the way you want it. I'm sorry for messing with it.
Oh, that's okay.
You could describe that that Urban Conservancy buffer and what's happening in there or not.
Yes. So as we previously talked about, our plans do show the reduced standard 85-foot buffer. That is highlighted here in the pinkish red color. As we've already talked about, we are not pursuing the 85-foot or the reduction to the 85-foot buffer. We will be pursuing the standard 100-foot buffer. So this reddish line will move back roughly 15 feet. With that movement, I'm going to zoom in just like one area will show. With that movement of the line, any associated grading or impact or land disturbance will also move out of that buffer. So as we update that, grading will slightly adjust through here. But as you can see, the green line, that's the 200-foot shoreline jurisdiction, just the jurisdiction. And within it, we have some landscape uses, amenities. But as you can see, there are no residential lots, no structures included in that. And so with the update to the Urban Conservancy buffer, that won't change. We have no intention to put anything in that shoreline jurisdiction that is not currently shown. The amenities and landscape components may adjust slightly due to grade, but the original intention of this whole area will maintain.
And within the 100-foot buffer, are there any proposed trails or, I guess, entry points?
No.
Okay. And there is, do I understand correctly from testimony, excuse me, let me rephrase that. What is the proposal as far as the existing dock as the project moves forward? Do you know right now?
It's a bit further down the road in terms of permitting, and at this time, we're really unsure of the fate of the dock.
Okay. Do you have any proposed use of the dock as part of the preliminary plat?
We do not.
All right. Anything else you want to address as far as the Urban Conservancy buffer before I move
I don't think so, no.
on? Okay. Then I just have two last topic areas for you to address that are completely separate from stormwater. One of which is, were you present for testimony, I think primarily by Mr. Center, as to, and some questions that were asked as to offsite sidewalks and bus stops?
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you, unless you need this document, I'll ask you to pull down the screen share just so the party can
Apologies. Thank
see you better. Thank you.
yes, I was present for his testimony.
Okay. So, what is the preliminary plat proposal before the examiner when it comes to offsite improvements? And I guess, could you describe the evolution or why you are providing what you're providing?
Yes. So our primary access point is Camp Court, and Camp Court will be enhanced to provide two-way vehicle traffic as well as a 5-foot-wide pedestrian sidewalk on one side. These improvements will extend to the intersection of Camp Court and Island Lake Road. Apologize if I have that incorrect. I don't have the road name in front of me. The improvements at that point will end there. As we evaluated the potential to extend sidewalks further offsite, connecting to other sidewalks in the neighborhood that are further north, we found that the existing road of Island Lake Road meanders through the right of way, and we couldn't find a suitable location for a sidewalk to continue, for continuous sidewalk on one side. And so, given that concern about pedestrian safety connection, a mitigation measure was put on site in by way of a public bus stop on site. So, public transit as well as school transportation will be managed internal to the project.
Okay, so there's two separate types of transit that you're providing for here, because it's not just schools, then you're also doing a Kitsap regional whatever the transit authority is.
It will be available for kids at public transportation. Yes.
Okay. And is that a public stop that or is that just only to serve the internal development, or as I understand it, you're providing public roads so folks can walk and use those stops and it'll be an addition to the system?
Correct. It will be full public use, not just this development.
And your roads then will be able to accommodate those buses.
Yes.
Okay. There was also some testimony concern about power lines. Do you have a proposal of part of the project to address power lines?
So we're at the beginning stages of coordination with Puget Sound Energy for a power plant for the entire site. But at this time, it is our understanding that it's the overhead power across Camp Court will actually be converted to underground power, which just further supports our primary access point.
And when you say will be converted to underground, is that a developer obligation or do you expect Puget Sound Energy to do that work?
No developer obligation.
Okay. So power will be undergrounded from the site to, do you have any idea as to where that will be undergrounded to? Is it Or is that still something that has to be worked out with PSE?
There's currently an overhead or a power pole in Camp Court that will need to be removed. And so when you remove one pole, you have to go to the next. The next power pole is north east-ish, roughly 100 to 200 feet northeast. So it would be underground that entire portion.
Okay, so there would not be, there wouldn't, I guess, physically be a concern as to power lines or power poles falling because their system will be undergrounded.
Right.
Is that true internally for the plat?
Yes, all internal power to the, internal to the plat will be underground.
Okay. And that's a requirement by Puget Sound Energy?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hubbard. That was all of the questions that I had, or topic areas that I had for you. Do you have anything remaining, given that you've been present to the testimony and the primary project representative here, that you want to address?
No, I think we've covered most all.
Thank you. I know your testimony's been extensive on a lot of topic areas. Thank you. So Ms. Hebron, you will need to be available for cross-examination as well as potentially questions from the examiner. And if I may, Mr. Examiner, I'm going to turn my screen off because my blinds do funny things and I turn into looking like I'm in a witness protection program if the sun continues.
Nice to have that sun anyway.
Yes. Yeah. rare in Seattle. Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Telgen, we're going to go till 10:55. I think, Ms. Jones, does that give us enough time to switch over to the pre-hearing conference if we stop at 10:55?
It will, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I just want to ask Mr. Telgen, how many hours do you have, left for rebuttal today? I'm just trying to decide if we should come back at 12:30 as opposed to 1 p.m., if that would make a big difference, you know, for this afternoon.
You mean for my sort of affirmative rebuttal?
Yeah.
Well, so Dr. Rosine is here. I mean, he's going to be my primary rebuttal witness. As I raised last time, I would like to talk with Mr. Lubisher and have him have a chance to review stuff. But as I said before, he's in other hearings until 3 p.m. today. I imagine we can get through Dr. Rosine, but I guess I would like an allowance to bring Mr. Lubisher back if need be. I don't know yet because he's not here.
So are you talking like taking a break at 3 o'clock to confer with him for a little bit and then coming back at 3:30 or 3:15 or something? Or
I'm thinking I'd like him to watch the testimony instead of just me, report it to him. I mean, if we can get a transcript out, I mean, if I'm talking to him and he says, well, geez, I need to listen to what she has to say or what he has to say or whatever.
Right.
So it's just a concern I have. And I won't know that until 3 p.m. when I speak to him.
Oh, I see. So you're saying, in other words, we may not have to go to another day. Is that what you have in mind?
I mean, certainly not a full day or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, not like a long thing. But the point is, I raised it as an issue. And since I won't have an opportunity even myself to chat with Mr. Lubisher until 3 p.m., I ultimately don't know the answer to that.
Okay. All right.
I can't offer I was to be in a pre-hearing conference that Mr. Lubisher was also going to be in at 1. I don't know if that covered part of it, but I know that's no longer happening.
I don't know. I know he had multiple appointments today and multiple things he was in. So I don't know the full scope of his schedule. Last I heard, he said he wasn't available until 3 because of all those things.
I will just note for the record, on behalf of the applicant, I'm getting a little bit concerned about how long the hearing process is taking, especially since Mr. Telegan has been asking for additional time to provide hydrology review. I think it would be appropriate to make sure that the timelines are consolidated so the applicant isn't punished inadvertently.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We're going to make this wrap this up as quickly as I possibly can.
Although I would say it hasn't been Mr. Telegan asking, it's been Mr. Telegan relying on the statement in the initial notice hearing.
We don't need to get into that again. So, all right, well, let's keep going till 10:55. And, but I guess in terms of, Mr. Telgen, do you see it? Does it make a big difference, you know, in terms of being able to finish today if we come back at 12:30 as opposed to 1?
I don't know. I don't think between four and 4.5 hours. And frankly, I have to go pee real bad. Okay. So, I mean, if we wanted to break right now, I'd be fine with that.
Well, let's see, break until 1 o'clock then, I guess, at this point. Yeah.
I don't care. I can do 15 minutes of cross, but I got quite a bit.
It's only 10:45 and I still have we have Ms. Hebron to wrap up. So if we could still capture the rest of the hour, we just take a 10-minute break right now and then capture the rest of the hour, that would be great. I'm sorry. Am I getting the timing? So
the pre-hearing conference is at 11. So.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay. So we will reconvene with Ms. Hebron, and can we commit to just try to be?
I would love to finish today, Ms. Kalushka. Yeah. I just can't, since I haven't been able to talk to one of my witnesses, that's all I'm saying, but I would love to finish today too.
Yeah, and I should be able to get this the testimony from today all transcribed. So I'll get
apologize.
That well.
I got my hours totally confused, though, clearly.
A lot going on. So, okay, we'll see you at 1 o'clock then.
All right. Thanks.